It's Thursday, February 21st, 2013. Welcome to Last Time on Video Games, a podcast about retro video games and sometimes some other things. You're listening to Episode 2, Sonic the Hedgehog. Running time for this episode is 31 minutes.
Hi, I'm Tyler.
And I'm Jeremy.
Alex is here. She's my wife.
She's hiding. Hi, it's all a lie.
Anyway, so here we are, talking about Sonic the freaking Hedgehog.
How did the Sega Genesis sell well? How did it compete with the Super Nintendo, but it's got this as its flagship? If you were a Sonic fan as a kid, I'm sorry. And if you're a Sonic fan now, the first internet forum I was an active part of was a Sonic fan forum. It's embarrassing to admit that, given the current connotations. But I was 14.
It got better as it went on, and then it got much worse.
I have very fond memories of Sonic 2, which I played when I was like 15.
So not a whole lot of nostalgia lens there.
No, but also it was a game I'd never had a Sega. I'd never had a Super Nintendo. But I never had a... Yeah, that was my weakness. I took a character generation. But I never had a Genesis, so the couple of times I would play with my friends, we always played Sonic 2 or Sonic 3.
I remember Sonic and Knuckles fairly fondly, but...
I never played that until I got Mega Collection.
That was the only Sonic game I ever played up until playing Sonic the Hedgehog on a Genesis for this project, and it was... Okay. People, Sonic the Hedgehog is not a very good game.
It was defeated by its marketing, and that it's not actually at all about being fat.
At the time, most characters had near instantaneous acceleration, or actually instantaneous, like Mega Man. Yeah. Who you press a button, and you just move at the top speed you're ever going to move.
Then you jump and shoot things. They could just call it Jumpy Shoot. Great.
Jump Shoot Man.
Stealing jokes from Egoraptor, because we're not above that.
Speaking of which, the Mega Man cover art, where he's like holding a pistol for the first... Like, who commissioned that? Did they even look at the game there?
Have you seen the Game of the Year cover art for the Arkham Asylum Game of the Year edition?
No.
It looks like 10 out of 10, the game. Also Batman.
But I feel like they came up with this idea to have a long acceleration period, and in order to accommodate that, they needed a high top speed. So you get Sonic running fast. And they put in a couple elements as kind of like a demo level, which I feel is like the first level of the Green Hill Zone.
Yeah.
Is that demo.
Yeah.
And then you have the second zone, which is all like platformy. Alex sat there and watched me play through the entire game. Every single time I try playing through the entire game. Okay.
So. That'll skip code.
Yeah, I didn't know about that. I am one of the few knaves in the world that does not know about the level skip. I wanted to have it be a, like, pure experience. I've never played Sonic the Hedgehog before.
There was a reason for that.
Yeah, and now I don't ever want to play it again, so...
Yes, you do. It's the best game ever.
No, maybe one of the sequels. The sequels are better.
Yeah, well, my memories of the sequels are better.
With the chows?
Yeah, that's the best one. Yeah. Sonic Adventure 2 Battle is a fantastic game. The graphics are pretty.
Yeah, it does look very nice, although...
Even when you're going fast.
What year did this come out in?
1991.
91? I thought it was 93.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Old geezer.
Yeah, no, I was 4.
Super old geezer.
Yeah, I know.
I was robust 2. Have we talked about all the bumpers that send you back for no goddamn reason yet?
I got pretty good at avoiding those after
a while. Yeah, so did I, but I did that by slowly going through every part of the level like it's mandatory and you don't want to do.
So, and that's the problem with Sonic the Hedgehog, is you have this ability to go really, really fast, and the game punishes you for doing that.
Yeah, it sends you back into enemies, it makes you miss rings, you don't get enough rings to go to bonus levels.
There's one thing that I actually really like that only occurs once, and it's like this rotating spike thing, and if you time it right, yeah, it's in Green Hill Zone.
Yeah, and where it's like the spike, and if you go right, you can just speed right over it, and if you don't, you have to like inch.
Yeah, but if you time it just right, you can run across the entire thing without running into spikes. And I really liked that, and I felt like the entire game should have been designed like Green Hill Zone.
Yeah.
Because it was good. You could
pretty sure it's Spring Hill.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Green Hill.
Spring Yard Zone is like the third level, okay. I think. Green Hill Zone is the first one.
It's Green Hill, okay.
It's almost everything is either Emerald Hill or Green Hill for all Sonic games.
Well, they all start with Hill Zone.
Yeah.
Except for Sonic Adventure 2 Battle, which starts with City Escape, which is awesome, because you're on a snowboard going down the city.
So really,
this game. Go play that instead, kids.
Yeah, this review is actually just a love letter to Sonic Adventure. So.
It's the only good one. I don't hate Sonic Heroes, unlike the rest of the world, but I think that's a deficiency with me. Not anything good about the game.
I like a lot of cheesy games, but that's a story for another day.
But we're singing the game's virtues. Multiple paths are cool.
Yeah, and the game does feature a lot of that. There are a lot of levels where you can take many different ways, but really only have one chance to get there, but that's okay.
I always thought, like, man, am I going the right way? And I always was. I never got lost in a level with multiple paths.
You cannot go the wrong way, I don't think, because they all eventually, like, it's kind of like a bunch of pipes that funnel you out to one spot.
The level design, while I think mistaken, is good.
I wish things had been designed that way and also allowed you to speed through it, where if you're just fast enough on reflexes, you get to take the high path as opposed to the low path.
With the later ones, they pretty much do that. Sonic Adventure 2, in particular, I remember, is doing that very well. Let's talk about how antiquated this game with no continues is in 1991.
That's actually one of the things I complained about very heavily while playing it, is one...
That's why I used the level skip game. I had continues.
So I actually ended up getting them from the
Chaos bonus levels, which are cool.
Anyway, so there are these bonus levels that are basically Sonic Pinball, where Sonic is being tossed around this randomly rotating room of potential death, and you have to go bounce, or I guess play Brick Breaker.
It's more like Brick Breaker than Sonic Spinball.
Well, yeah, actual Sonic Spinball is an entirely different thing. This is Sonic Pinball. You're in this room, and it's rotating randomly, and there are some things that you can kind of touch that... like, move it the other direction, although I found touching them was inconsistent about actually making that happen.
And there are other things that you touch that ends the bonus level.
Yeah.
If you collect 50 rings...
You get a continue!
If you collect a Chaos Emerald 6 times, you get a slightly better ending that's not worth it at all.
Yeah, what actually happens in the better ending? Because I didn't care enough.
You know where Sonic, like, runs and there's a big party, like, of animals?
Yeah.
He, like, releases the emeralds and then a bunch of plants grow.
Oh, boy.
And then at the end, instead of juggling emeralds, Robotnik is jumping up and down on a switch. It says the end, instead of try again. Let's go back to the continues thing, because I had a point with that.
Okay.
There are a lot of obstacles where, because you don't have continues, instead of killing you, it sends you back into the level and makes you do the thing again. And if you're bad at it, again. And again. In a game that's obstinately about being fast, that's just really frustrating. The more games we play, the more I'm sort of on this mentality that a game should never make you repeat a challenge, unless it feels like it's a test rewarding you for getting through that challenge before, like boss rushes or good boss fights. Sonic is a game that makes you do the same thing over and over again if you make a little mistake.
So there are kind of the checkpoints between certain portions of the level.
Yeah.
I don't feel they're plentiful enough.
There's usually one, sometimes two per level.
There are a lot of instant death things, which doesn't really make any sense for Sonic.
The instant death things are inconsistent, too. Sometimes spikes kill you immediately, and sometimes they just take a ring.
Alex actually knows the difference. She's been able to point out to me the ones that do and the ones that don't, but I can't see any visual difference between them.
So, I think the ones that insta-kill you are a little shorter.
The insta-death spikes are not mounted on top of the ground.
Oh, is that
it? If you can't see the ground beneath them, they will kill you.
Okay. Although, I'm not a huge fan of insta-death.
Like in the Green Hill Zone, there's the area with the moving little skinny platforms. There's a checkpoint right in the middle. Those are instant-death because you can't see the ground underneath them. As opposed to, there's one behind the waterfall where there's a bunch of spikes. But they're on the ground.
That ground wall. Okay, that makes sense. It's a little better than an empty pit because that lets you get away with empty pits that lead down to new paths. That don't feel like cheating.
Although there are some empty pits that are actually just death pits, and it doesn't really distinguish between them until after you jump down them, so you just kind of have to hope that you're not...
One of the cool things about Sonic is you can look up and down by holding the control stick up or holding it down, and that will usually tell you, and it's good for finding secrets. And the game does have some cool secret places.
I feel like it's one of the earlier games that did that, too.
Yes, it feels pretty good. Other than there are a few times where I just wanted to duck some enemy attacks, and I was looking down and couldn't see the enemy I was trying to avoid.
So, speaking of punishing you for trying to go fast.
It's the water level part?
We'll get there. I have a lot of things to say about that. Well, maybe not a lot, more just an angry rant. Yeah, fist shaking in its general direction.
I'll join you.
No, actually, the second level. So, a lot of Green Hill Zone, you can get away with, I guess, speedrunning the levels.
Yeah.
The second zone, the marble...
Cuff, oh, yeah.
I forget what the hell it's called, but...
Lava Zone, where you have to jump and can never move because you have to wait for platforms.
Yeah, it's a very slow-moving platforming level, and it completely takes the game in a different direction, and it stays in that direction for the rest of the game until...
Oh, the fifth zone, I think? The futuristic-looking one?
Yeah, that has a little bit of the
Star Knight Zone, maybe?
Yeah, man, that was trippy.
I don't think Alex has ever seen the game played all the way through until
my brother never made it past the third zone, and I'm super retarded, so I've never played past the first
one. I don't remember Springyard Zone, but I totally remember that robot fight at the end.
Which one?
The one where he's got the pillars that come down on you and the light.
Oh, yeah, that's what, like the final boss
fight. Yeah, that's the one I meant. Okay. I remember that, but I don't remember anything after the water level, between the water level.
I remember
the water level boss is such a pain that I don't think I would ever beat it again.
The first time I tried to play through that game, I got a game over in that boss fight because I wasn't sure whether I had to like keep up with him or not, so I was trying
kind
really
of
hard
do, to... but it's hard to be... Like, if you fall behind too far, the water catches up, and then you're screwed.
Yeah, if you drown, you're dead. Now, my big problem was I was trying to keep up with him fast enough that I was avoiding a lot of the obstacles, and that killed me, so...
Huh.
Or I guess not avoiding, ignoring.
Yeah, you have to avoid... It's tough. It's, I think, the hardest boss fight.
And it's not really even a boss fight. Like, you get to the top, and he's like, oh no, he caught up with me, and then he just leaves.
Yeah. Speaking of the boss fights, I really like boss fights of Sonic. That's one thing they do pretty well, I think.
Indeed. And really, I felt that Sonic's mode of attack was actually pretty nice and consistent and felt alright, except there are some times where you're in the air and you're coming down on top of an enemy, but you don't happen to be spinning enough.
Yeah, especially Springyard Zone. There are a lot of places where the only way to get up is with a spring, but you can't attack them.
Yeah.
And I miss the spin dash. There are actually versions of Sonic 1 that add the spin dash in from later.
Which, really?
Yeah. But I didn't have
to. Me neither. Sonic feels at odds with itself, and it's lacking a lot of good design elements that I feel that game designers had figured out by that. I remember ranting about that a lot while I was playing that game, that it really feels like an arcade quarter-sucking game.
Yeah, well, even the graphics kind of make it look that way. And the difference in levels, Sonic's always been his own worst enemy. Even Sonic 2 has those terrible Eggman and mediocre Knuckles levels.
And it doesn't really make any sense.
Yeah, Sonic is a game that doesn't really know what it's got. I really like Sonic Generations, the newest one. But Sonic fans have this problem where every time a new Sonic game comes out, they're like, this is the one! They kind of cried wolf so much that no one believes them. I actually honestly like Sonic Generations, though.
I've heard mixed things about it, that the actual old Sonic levels are awesome, but the newer ones are...
I actually really like the newer ones. They're about speed. You have a move, it consumes some ring that instantly moves you to top speed.
That's actually pretty neat.
Yeah.
But I feel like they can do a regular 2D Sonic game and focus it on, I guess, just speed.
And you play the Wii one, where you're always moving, and it's the reaction game. Does that suck?
No, and I don't think it needs to be quite that. It needs to keep a little bit of the platforming, but there needs to be more of the running really fast, because that's when you feel like you're having most fun in this game.
I really think Sonic Generations did that, honestly, both in the 2D and 3D ones. I actually prefer the 3D, unlike everyone else. The only thing that it really gets wrong is the 3D and the 2D control differently, and there are parts in the 3D where it shifts perspective to a side thing.
And it changes the controls?
No, it doesn't change the controls. It's completely... You don't know what you're doing. And you're like, oh, I just had the homing attack, which I have in 3D mode.
Really, the music in Sonic is a lot of fun. There are a couple levels that annoy me, but...
I have a problem with music,
really?
Which is that most of the songs are good, but they play for three levels. They get super old, especially if you're stuck on a level.
You're telling
about
me about that.
A level and a half in. And there's also always only one boss theme, which I guess is okay, seeing as there's only one boss, but it would have been cool to have more.
But, and I feel like they could have done a themed boss music tailored around the music in that level.
Yeah, and that's what I was just thinking.
And, yeah, I guess the music is good for one stage, but there are always three stages. On the other hand, in the last zone, there are these giant cog things that you can run around that, like, magnetically grip you.
Those are cool. There are lots of cool things in lots of the zone.
I feel like this game had a lot of good ideas, but it's almost seemed like they didn't realize they were good ideas and then just didn't use them much.
Sonic 2 is a much better game, as I remember. It seems to deliver on the promise. Have you played at all the version of this on the Sega Master System?
No.
Which is completely different level design and 8-bit graphics. I wonder if it's better.
I don't know.
I've only seen screenshots of it.
I don't know. I might have to hit it up sometime. But in general, Sonic the Hedgehog is it's frustrating. More frustrating than fun. There are some fun parts, but it's mostly...
I think if you had never heard of Sonic and didn't know who he was, maybe it would be a fun game. If you didn't associate it with speed?
I don't think so, because the Green Hill Zone gives you a taste of that, and then you always want to do it and never can.
That's true.
Pretty much the very first thing they do is send you through one of those... It sends you down, like, a windy path in a ball, and then over... Yeah, and it's really neat.
And it shows off... The colors are really good, too, going back to the graphics. I kind of do see why people liked this game when they were young and didn't have much appreciation for game depth.
No, my brother played this game for days and days and days at a time. Never got past the third level, but was still totally addicted.
And I played Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers for days and days and days at a time. That's the first game I ever beat, but I don't think it's a masterpiece. Although I do kind of want to go back and play it sometime.
I remember that game. I also played Roadrunner versus Wile E. Coyote, which had some of the most obtuse level design ever. Maybe we should play that at some point.
We can play Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde if you want obtuse level design.
Yeah, I don't know. Sonic's okay. I always felt like Mario games are better constructed.
If you compare this to Super Mario Bros., it's way better. If you compare it to Mario 3, it starts to lag. And if you compare it to Super Mario World, which came out shortly before, it doesn't measure up at all.
Super Mario World came out before? 1990?
1991. They were both 1991. It was a few months earlier.
And Super Mario World, I think, is a testament to what a tight platformer can be. So
I think Super Mario grows. It gets advantage over previous video games. It's tight control.
But it really, by comparison, I don't know why people would say, oh, hey, look at this blue hedgehog. Let's pick up a Sega Genesis instead of Super Nintendo.
Because Sega do what Nintendo don't.
Yeah, that is, I remember that marketing campaign. Oh, that was horrible. Did you ever see the Sega...
I'm going to have to go bleach my brain now.
Did you ever see the Saturn marketing campaign?
I never saw Saturn.
Ed owns one. And Space Channel 5.
You just failed your will save to disbelieve.
They had a commercial where, like, there's a guy watching TV, and the TV starts talking to him, and then, like, he goes insane, and there's, like... random images of death and destruction flashing, and then his head explodes, and then there's like...
Are you sure this wasn't for Virtual Boy?
Virtual Boy? No, this was an advertisement for the Saturn. I like Sega, alright. I their only game is Sonic the Hedgehog.
Play Hatcher and the Giant Egg. Fantasy Star.
I do like
Fantasy Star. I love me some Fantasy Star Online. I'm eager to play the older one. 2 out of 10?
No, it's better than ActRaiser. I give it a 4 out of 10.
Yeah, it's better than ActRaiser.
Oh yeah, we're just going to 1.
I agree, it's better than ActRaiser. If it's not always frustrating, it has a sweet first level, and sometimes it lets you pretend that it's going to have more sweet levels. It has cool boss fights. I feel like we didn't emphasize that enough. I actually even like the last boss fight.
That is one of the things that works in its favor, is the boss fights are cool, and it's...
And it's a callback to Mario, and it's the same boss every time, but it's got more variety than Bowser and Super Mario Bros. 2, as well on 2.
One thing, I don't know that a lot of people notice this, they're red and blue. Which...
Yeah, basic color. It's got a lot of cool colors, too.
Yeah.
And they're best on the first level, but throughout.
I feel that was one of the few intentional character design choices, was that they made the villain the opposite color of the hero.
Yeah.
Which was kind of neat, but other than that, it's an okay game. I'd say if you're willing to be very frustrated at an older game, then you should play it, but...
Yeah, if you're a Sonic fan, it's worth checking out how far things have come. And you can know that Sonic games were bad in the past, too.
Yeah. It's not that Sega's now producing bad games, it's that they're still producing bad games.
But if you compare this to Sonic 3D...
Yeah, that's going to have to be on the list eventually.
No, it doesn't have to be. We control the list, we have the power.
So yeah, that was a game. It was Sonic the Hedgehog. I don't know that I have any more to say about it other than...
It's not as good as Mario.
It's not as good as Mario, and I don't know how it ever sold.
Like Halo, it was the only good game on its system.
Zach would punch you in the face.
He would say, nope, Knights of the Old Republic.
Oh, yeah, no, Knights of the Old Republic.
Yeah, that was technically on there.
Yep, technically.
It was Jade Empire. That wasn't bad.
Yeah.
Also BioWare.
I've heard good things about it. I've seen the story dissected in ways that makes me think it would be good. But it's a Halo box.
It is a... Yeah, I owned a Halo box and not Halo. I had Counter-Strike.
Yeah, that...
Which was not split-screen, and yeah, I don't know why they ported Counter-Strike to a console. That was just... Or TF2, for that matter. Who decided that?
Well, when they signed the agreement with Microsoft, it was so bad they assumed it had to change.
And then it never did.
Yeah, so TF2 never flourished on console.
I feel like it could have.
Yeah, well, if it had been supported to the level that the Steam version is, but they control the manufacturing stuff for Steam, and Microsoft has to pay for the manufacturing stuff on the Xbox, and Steam wasn't willing to pay them what they wanted. I've heard it's $1 million to put a patch through on.
Okay, so, note to self.
That's obnoxious.
Yeah. It might have been 1,000. I might be way blowing that out of proportion, but it was pretty high.
Yeah.
I think it was 1,000,000 for a day one patch, because they wanted to disincentivize that.
It's something to keep in mind as a game developer, though, is watch out for patching.
Yeah. Steam is much more reasonable about that.
Yeah, which is more or less free, actually.
Yeah, well, they're trying to be very open to indie development. See if there's any talent out there.
They've garnered a lot of it. Have you heard about Greenlight?
Yeah.
I know. It's what, kind of what I was referring to. So we want to talk about Greenlight really quick and Kickstarter and crowdfunding in general?
Kickstarter is cool. Actually, no, that's not true. I have Kickstarted a video game.
I don't think I have. So, and mostly because I haven't really had a whole lot of time to play random games, and I'm also really cheap.
I Kickstarted one video game, one board game, but it was at the $1 level, so I don't know that that really counts.
Okay, Extra Credits has talked about this, and Extra Credits is a fantastic show, and they do everything wonderfully, but they don't really...
They're way better than us, and I don't even watch them.
I don't feel like they say anything that isn't to me intuitive already, but that maybe someone gets something out of it. What they point out about crowdfunding is money talks in any industry, and very much so in game design. If people continue to buy Call of Duty over and over again, they're going to keep making Call of Duties.
I know.
Because they will make money on it. And that's something that we rail against, and Zach rails against, even though he continues to buy them. He's like, these are terrible games, why do I keep buying them? And then he does. With crowdfunding, that, I guess, directs the money flow more specifically. You can specifically say, I want this game reality, and you give your money to those people, and they hopefully make a game.
And it also allows things to be distributed straight to the people who will be buying them without any need to put them on shelves, which drastically cuts the cost. You literally have no middleman in a Kickstarter situation.
And as a convenient segue, Steam. Well, I've been a proponent of Steam for a very long time because the way they handle having games is different than the major AAA industry. They develop their games in a very similar manner, but they allow you to have your games anywhere. They don't limit you to just one copy, as long as you have an account and a computer.
It's not quite as good as Impulse was before GameStop bought them, where whenever you bought a digital copy, they would ship you a physical copy as well.
Well, that's neat.
Yeah.
On the other hand, a lot of these games can't afford physical copies.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with that. That's one of the successes of indie games, is you have the internet.
I have seen a lot of really innovative games come out first on their own websites, and then later on Steam. On that note, there's Greenlight, because I guess Steam was getting too many game requests, so now they're trying to narrow the games that they actually present by having you vote on whether or not you would play a game if it were available through Steam. I don't know how much you've looked at it.
I'm familiar with it. The main thing I heard was they started charging $100 for you to submit something to it as a basic entry fee. Mostly just to keep out riffraff. People who literally have a game that's like, press L, yay. You know, the idea being that $100 is not a huge barrier to entry, but it is at least a barrier. It's more than the troll is willing to pay.
I did not hear about that. When I first looked at Greenlight, it was free to enter any game, and I have since voted on a lot of games, but one of the things I don't really get about it, though, is that they don't really have a set, I guess, a number of green lights to approve a game. They came out with a system not knowing what their response
is. Is it just the best one that gets made? Is it just based on
no metrics? It's like if there's whatever they classify as enough interest, which is never concretely defined anywhere, as far as I can tell, then they will
be super specific. It might be a cost-benefit analysis thing. Or this game is going to cost X, so we will make X money, so we need to make ship X copies for this to be profitable. And, you know, X people, or X percent of people who say they're interested will actually buy it at price point Y. Variables.
Economics, the squishiest of science. Except maybe non-molecular biology.
Anthropology?
Oh yeah, anthropology is pretty damn squishy. Okay, so here's something actually related to video games that has to do with cultural anthropology. The origin of... Actually, well, okay, there are two tacks I can take with this. Either shooters or RPGs. Which one do we want to go on?
Let's do shooters, because they're less fun.
Maybe we can get in why they're less fun.
I believe shooters are sort of a evolution of sports. We're becoming a less physically fit and active society, but we still like to compete.
Alex and I were talking about this very recently, actually, how sports are good as surrogate for tribal warfare.
Yeah, baseball and football, two most popular American sports, are all about taking territory.
Yep, and with a shooter, especially a lot of the modern Call of Duties, they randomly lump you in a team, and you support the team, unless you're a team-killing asshat.
Yeah.
But you support the team, and your team wins, and they're like, yay, and then you have a new team, and it's great for that.
Yeah, I'm not against shooters as a genre, really. I mean, yes, they're over-prevalent, and the fact that game design is stagnated, and because so many shooters come out, it's most prevalent with shooters, not that other genres are immune to it.
I guess the stagnancy is one thing, and that's mostly due to a terrible market, but so there's a different take on shooters between American culture and Japanese culture. And the big difference is, at its core, Americans view weapons as tools. Whereas Japan has this very old belief that a weapon is an extension of yourself. Wandering Ronin lived or died by the swords they carried. Their sword was their life. And that's reflected in a lot of Japanese culture, and especially in video games, where your weapon grows with you. You never really discard your... Okay, well, RPGs not the same.
I was going to say, yeah, it's the thing of Symphony of the Night.
No, but in a lot of Japanese shooters, of which there aren't many, but your weapon never changes, or I guess you never get a new weapon. Your weapon grows as your character grows.
Yeah.
Which is a very Japanese philosophy. Your weapon is you. In American shooters, you pick up guns and you huck them away indiscriminately whenever you find a better one.
Or modern ones, old ones. You have your briefcase of guns, and you only use the pistol because what if you run out of machine gun ammo? That would be the worst thing.
Ah, the Doom Guy. Did you ever see the Doom Guy comic?
Yes. Rip and tag, oh gods! You never watched the Red vs. Blue Immersion series?
I did not.
They totally do one where they load the both of them down with all the guns that Doom Marine has and rations and see if he can run a basic obstacle course. And one of them literally just falls over at the beginning and doesn't do anything. It's not quite as good as the one they're trying to do side-scrolling, but...
But that's a very basic, I guess, difference. Okay, and the RPG talk is actually different, so maybe we can also do the RPG talk at the same time. But that's a fundamental difference between American and Japanese cultures, and I guess the way we view...
Can I do a random cultural observation that's probably flawed on RPGs?
I'm not sure
if this is where you're going or not.
Maybe.
American RPGs are very much about choice. The BioWare style is all about choice of narrative and manipulating your narrative and being the person who sets events into motion. And Bethesda, once you're choosing your class, you're choosing your weapons, the type of person you're going to be. And you know, American societies are very much about the cowboy cop being, you know, the guy.
I want to be the guy.
Yeah, exactly. And motivating your world. Whereas Japanese are sort of, not more subservient, but they're very much more about taking their role in society and carrying it out. And Japanese RPGs are about watching a story. You have a preset role.
And that's really the big difference there. But they call them Western and Japanese RPGs, and I think these are terrible names for them. I think it should be, like, maybe story-driven RPGs.
But they're both, I think, like, Mass Effect is kind of more story-driven in a lot of ways than Final Fantasy.
The fundamental difference between the two is that Japanese RPGs are very much focused on story.
You're watching a character grow and develop, whereas in an American one, you're causing the character to develop, sometimes in nonsensical ways, if that's what you want to do.
But the focus in Western RPGs isn't actually story. I mean, the story could be there, it could be a main element, but the focus in Western RPGs is a sense of empowerment. A little bit of, I guess, fantasy. You are...
Imagine that.
Well, okay, yes.
Video game where you get to carry out a fantasy... Next you'll be telling me you can rescue a princess from a dragon.
No, but very much the point in Western RPGs is a sense of empowerment, and that's why sandbox games are very popular, is because you can do basically whatever you want, and that's the focus there is entirely different than the focus in the Japanese RPG, but they both have a role you're playing with ostensibly a story-focused thing, and you have stats, which is apparently what an RPG is nowadays, stats.
You have stats in Call of Duty.
Yeah, I know. And that's actually another thing I wanted to talk about eventually, is what makes a genre, and why no one thinks of Call of Duty as an RPG, even though it has stats, and why people don't think of, what's the newest Elder Scrolls? Skyrim? There we go, took an arrow to the knee there. And that's why people don't view Elder Scrolls as, like, a first-person shooter, even though you can, like, shoot a bow. And from his first-person perspective.
Yeah.
And the difference there is focus on the feeling you're trying to evoke. Call of Duty is very fast, very action-paced, and it's kind of it's potato chips.
Yeah.
It is the potato chips of the gaming world. Yeah, but you can pretty much pop it constantly, and it's not very filling, but it's there. It's a game.
For some people, it's filling. If you're into competition like that. I mean, I've gotten into StarCraft II series competition, and when you're in it like that, it feels very important to you, and it's about self-growth. But on the other hand, StarCraft II games take 30 minutes, and it's one-on-one, and it's to be very pretentious, like a chess game.
Strategy games are good for that in general.
At high level. At high levels, where you and your opponent are at the same level. Otherwise, it does become masturbatory, ha-ha, all our base are belong to us, type stuff. And that's fun sometimes, but not really what the competition is about.
But everyone comes to games bringing something different. And that's one of the weird things about games as a medium, is that they're inherently interactive. It's like a picture, you look at a picture, you interpret it somehow, and that's it, you're done. The artist's work has been presented to you.
So have you seen Roger Ebert proof why games aren't art?
No, I would be willing to argue to the death.
Yeah, no, I would too, but I think it's an interesting argument, not even a wrong argument other than the conclusion. And it's basically because games are interactive, they're not art. He says that basically a game either has to have A, a goal, or B, a way to score.
I don't think that's true.
You not?
No, I don't think that games have to be fun, necessarily, even.
Well, no, I don't. Well, I think to succeed, they do.
Well, I think in order to be a truly enjoyable playing experience, they probably should be. But I think that you can present a game that does not have any clearly defined goal, or even a goal at all. You can't win. or lose, for
that matter. Well, there's Minecraft.
Yeah, and, well, Minecraft is hardly art.
It's a sandbox to create your own goals in.
Yes, but at the same time, you could present a game, and I can't think of one off at the top of my head. Maybe, like, a surreal adventure through someone's mind or something. But you could present a game that isn't necessarily fun or has a concrete ending, but conveys something about humanity or something about the person who made it. And I would...
You could develop psychic powers tomorrow.
I think such a thing is possible, and I think that if that is possible, then the medium can be art.
I think the medium can be art, but I think...
Based on his own definition. Ah. I think it can be art and be fun at the same time.
Okay.
So I don't think it is necessary for art games to not be fun.
He would not say that art has to be not fun.
Well, yes, but I think something... Why can it not be art if you can interact with it? I don't understand why that's...
I think he has a fundamental that art is something someone has produced, and that's the end. And now you're just judging it. You're not creating your own thing in it.
What makes games so fun is that you become...
I agree.
It's like someone does most of a masterpiece, and then you get to finish it off. That would be cool.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think that's an interesting counter-argument. I think it's a useful counter-argument to look at. I don't think it's a correct one.
No, and I can see where he's coming from with that. I just don't... I feel like an interactive experience is inherently more enjoyable than a non-interactive experience, which is why I generally prefer reading it to watching TV.
I think that's very much something you would say with your previous "I don't think that lore I should ever be taken" kind of thing.
That is true, and sometimes I like to, like, not really do a whole lot, but I always think, and...
Yeah, well, I'm always very critical of movies I watch, even movies that are sort of dumb movies that I enjoy, I'm pretty critical of.
And that's one of those, like, Doctor Who. It's goofy, it's silly, it's ridiculous, it's occasionally...
But it's basic superhero fantasy.
Yeah, and...
It's done very well.
I would hardly call Doctor Who art. It's...
There are some episodes. The Weeping Angels, I think, prey on a very basic and human fear.
They're an excellent creature, enemy, villain.
And they take advantage of the medium very well that they're in.
It's really...
But that's episodes like Blink are the exception to the rule.
I really can't remember this guy's name every time I want to...
Stephen Moffat?
Yes, goddamn Stephen Moffat, the Madame du Pompadour episode.
I actually didn't like that one the first time I watched it.
Oh my god.
I came back, I watched it the second time.
I'm falling like an idiot.
It took me like 10 episodes to get used to David Tennant, and I don't know why. Oh, I think I'm fundamentally bald.
Yeah, do you not want to bone him?
No, but you know who I would bang? Every girl in Harvest Moon 64.
Which is all well and good, but I don't think that's on the Virtual Console. You know what is on the Virtual Console? The original Harvest Moon for the Super Nintendo. We should totally play that.
This has been a production of Last Time on Video Games. Copyright 2013, fully owned by its hosts. The games, movies, and other media mentioned in this podcast are owned by their respective owners. Obviously, theme songs by me. You can find more episodes and other useful things at lasttimeonvideogames.com. If you'd like to email us, you can do so at ltovg@lasttimeonvideogames.com. If you'd like to talk to a specific host, Tyler, that's me, can be reached at tyler@lasttimeonvideogames.com, and Jeremy can be reached at jeremy@lasttimeonvideogames.com. This product was tested on animals. My cat did not approve.
You are the best gun ever, I love you! Oh, look, a new gun!